We are Americans. We have gained so much, but we have lost the war. We have discovered so much, but we have lost ourselves within the path. Traditional values are devalued, and propaganda is entered as new social norms. We find ourselves on the cuff of a new world, a country that has been stolen from within, a country that is divided. The darkness is setting in, and the path to recovery is hard to see. We fought in wars at the shores of different countries to keep our home safe. But war raged within our shores in the cover of darkness. Is history repeating itself? Is war within our shores brewing? We look at our leaders for direction, but get more divided in the process. Our division is filled with hatred and anxiety that the other side will get control. But that hatred and division is breaking down the American soul. The American soul that made our country the beacon of hope. Our country has a history. A history that one side might look as a stain in time, but also a history that many see as the foundation of our country. Our division is only tearing down our country, and if we continue down this path, our country will be left in the ashes. In the ashes, we will see the division and the hatred with the fuel that burned down our American soul. We might have different views, and our division can be seen as miles apart. But one thing we have in common is that we are all Americans, and we are all part of the fabric that makes our country the beacon of hope. So, the reason why I wrote that, we're living in some very, very crazy times right now with everything that's going on in Ukraine and everything like that.
Aren't we? Yeah.
But I think... people forget how great this country is sometimes, and how much it gives to other nations and stuff like that. But we forget that we are all part of that. And if we continue down this path of division and hatred towards sides, that's what it is. It's basically this division between thoughts, between these way of thinking, but if there's no compromise within that, then this great hope, this great dream that is America will die. So that's the reason why I wrote that. I just think it's good to understand that we do live in the greatest country in the world. So,
and that the country that we live in just allows us for many opportunities. And I think, James, you really took that to the next level when you started your own gym, and you are an Air Force veteran. Woo-hoo. Go Air Force. Yeah. Stick my tongue out to you. But how did you... Well, first of all, let's start off with your story. What is your story, and how did you transition from the Air Force to being a gym owner?
It was a long course. While I was active duty, came back from first deployment, I was asked if I wanted to be a PT leader, to which I said no. And then I was reminded I wasn't actually being asked. And So, I was then very happy I was going to be a PT leader very abruptly. So I very much went into it kicking and screaming. It was not a sort of voluntary path by necessity. And I got tasked with helping out sort of the remedial PT airmen, and I didn't want to fail at a task I was given. I didn't want to, I don't like that. So decided I was going to take it pretty seriously and notice I had a knack for it, and I was able to observe certain things going on because I was always active. I was good at PT, which is why I was selected. But after that, I started to develop kind of a passion for it pretty quickly. And
endorphin highs.
Yeah, a little bit. And there was something deeply rewarding about someone who would be, in a lot of pain, trying to do an exercise, be it a push-up or a sit-up, whatever. And, we'd figure out what the problem was, create a solution, implement it, and it works. And suddenly they're not in pain doing this, movement for whatever it was. So being that I had an act for it, I decided to get certified as a trainer and pursued that for a little while. So I was active duty and then working as a trainer at the same time.
Yeah.
And since then, I've worked at, 7 or 8 gyms. Got out after 4 years, did my Get my foreign out. I have got a mouth on me, so that was probably a wise decision.
Yeah.
So just working through years of various levels of training and at gyms, it kind of got to a point where I realized I was seeing the holes in the fitness industry as a whole.
Yeah.
And as a kind of scaling out just a little bit, I was able to see certain things that I didn't like and that I thought could be improved on. And that's when I decided I really, really needed to start working on my own vision, cultivate something that was a little bit more, I don't want to say holistic, but holistic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I met you at Lifetime.
Yeah.
And this guy has some massive, massive legs. And he's always wearing leggings. Always in leggings. Which I thought was weird.
I knew this was coming up.
Every time I was like, he's like, hey, you want to do some squats? And I'm like, man, I don't know about it. I don't know if I want to do some squats with you, man. Because it's just massive ass legs and you're just wearing leggings. It's kind of weird here. Man. But your workouts that you would do, I was just like, but it was all like continuously all legs. I was like, holy crap. That's the reason his legs are humongous, brother. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, if you build them, show them off.
There you go.
And I'll say too, I don't think it's much of a stretch for you and I to believe that on average, you were to take the average woman and say she's smarter than the average guy, you know, there's a solid shot. They're on to something with leggings.
Oh yeah.
They're comfortable as hell, man. I love
them. I mean, I'm wearing leggings right now.
You get it.
It's business and it's workout. And if I want to go to the gym, I just take this off. I've got something underneath, and we're good.
Yeah, fun.
So then you decided when you were at Lifetime that you wanted to open up your own gym. So like,
yeah.
What was the strategy along with opening up that gym? Because you're saying that you saw the holes within other gyms. So what were some of the holes that you saw and how did you want to change that?
From a business standpoint, the single biggest issue that the industry faced was that there's a lot of little gimmicks, like, you know, you need 60 days to cancel a membership here, or just little things like that, you know, hidden fees, just things I didn't want to deal with that were the principal complaints that we heard over and over at four different corporate gyms over the course of 10 years. Like, this is a continuous problem. So, okay, we can improve that. Make it as simple as possible.
Yeah.
You know, there's no need for complexity where there isn't a need for complexity. But from an implementation standpoint, there was a compartmentalization of services and expertise that I thought was wholly unnecessary. Mm-hmm. We have physical therapists who know how to train people. We have trainers who know probably 60% of what most physical therapists know. We have physicians who want to implement services and approaches that only work when they're in conjunction with these other modalities. And everything in the medical and fitness industry is compartmentalized to hell. And you'll never meet a physical therapist who really talks to a doctor. You'll never meet a doctor who talks to a trainer.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's even to the extent of they would counteract each other. So they would like prescribe certain movements that actually is going to exacerbate a problem.
Yes. I still see that regularly. Like when one of my clients had an abdominal hernia and her doctor recommended she do mostly plyometric work. And that's one of the very first things. Yes. One of the very first things that'd be immediately contraindicated. And you could WebMD that and find that would be a huge no-no. So you're exactly right. So I had cultivated sort of a vision that if you could unify these things rather than compartmentalize them, that there'd be a continuation of service and care from somebody who's either fresh out of surgery or fresh off a slight injury, whatever it might be, all the way back to, you know, professional level of athleticism or up to a point where they've never been, you know, somebody in their 60s who finally fixes like a sciatica issue or a knee problem, and now they're able to move and function like they've never done before. I knew that we're on the cusp of that. The opportunity was there, and I didn't see anybody capitalizing on it properly.
Your vision is so unbelievably unique in that you want an integrative approach of like physical therapy, training, and a couple other programs, right?
For sure. So as of right now, we do have physical therapists, physicians, a nurse practitioner, and trainers, of course.
That is awesome.
And we're unified under the same roof, which is a wonderful thing. We talk to each other regularly. Just talked to Dr. Schrank, one of the physical therapists today, about one of my clients who had a real minor pec issue. We went over the exact treatment, care plan. It was really cool, but that we can share that information back and forth so easily and have a continuation of plan and care is really maybe perhaps not unique, but it is very rare.
So, but at the same time, your gym is fairly small, and that's yep. that's how you want it because Precisely. Because of the interaction, mm-hmm. the community, the relationships that you build with your people is
exactly.
And so that alone is, in many ways, you develop this family within that one family that has all of these other resources that you can be able to utilize to strengthen that person's path forward.
Exactly right. So in 2020, the very beginning, so roughly January 2020, I helped a friend of mine who's a physician. I used to train him back at a different gym, helps him build a home gym. Fairly extensive, but really, really well equipped. And when the shutdown happened, he called me. He said, "Hey, if you need to train anybody, here at the garage gym while the shutdown's going on, just let me know and I'll, make that happen." So when the shutdown happened, I called him back. I was like, "Yeah, I absolutely want to get some people trained over here."
Your network is your net worth. Just saying.
Yes.
Awesome. Yes.
That's awesome.
Well, he comes out to his gym the next morning and it's, and his garage is organized. I've mopped it. Like everything is aligned in just such a way. I know the little, hey, OCD everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he was like, "Oh, okay. So my gym is, perfectly, organized and beautiful looking and everything's clean and wiped out. So, nothing lost there." And his expectation was that I was going to be training like maybe an hour or two a day. And no, I was there 7-8 hours a day.
Damn.
So,
yeah.
People were excited to work out.
Hell yeah.
Those who wanted to before still wanted to. So it was a wonderful supply demand curve that worked in my favor in that moment.
Yeah.
But that's where he came to me and he said, "Hey, have you ever thought about opening a gym?" And I was like, only for the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah,
mom. Ish. Just a little bit. Short amount of time.
I don't think anybody who becomes a trainer does not think at one point, "Hey, I should open up my own gym."
Well, he's an ER physician and he's also in phenomenal shape and trains very hard. And he was always kind of wanted to own a gym in conjunction with a medical clinic, go into private practice, offer services that are not necessarily offered at most, emergency rooms and, teaching hospitals. He wanted to do that, which I thought was in perfect alignment with what I'd always wanted. So
we started that journey. Just a small town girl. Yeah. Just a small town boy.
Boy,
like you're the perfect match.
Yes,
you wanted a gym.
Small town boy with leggings. There you go.
You wanted a gym and integrative gym.
So does everybody at your gym wear leggings, brother? So if I have to go to your gym, I only have to wear leggings.
A bare ass or leggings, your choice, man.
I'm gonna knock it off. You're just jealous. You're so jealous.
Well, I wish I had his legs. God, I wish I had his legs.
It is so apparent. Back to the show.
So the word in the process of setting the whole thing up, the word serendipity came up repeatedly. Just things seems to fall into place as we're working.
Interesting.
It did. And so I spent 6 months designing the place, building it in 3D rendering software, building out the equipment we wanted, making sure that everything was going to fit properly. Because the last thing you want to do is order a $5,000 piece of equipment and it turns out it doesn't fit in your space.
Right?
That's horrifying. So I very much wanted to avoid that wherever it was remotely possible. But we also wanted to make sure that it was going to fit within the budget, that things were going to organize in just such a way that the gym would flow and function. We could have the number of trainers we wanted. So there's a lot of little considerations there. So that took me about 6 months. And then in November, somebody I'd worked with over at Erosti, she was an Erosti assistant there.
Pain management clinic.
Yes. Really good one at that.
Yeah.
But she had finished up physical therapy school. So she's a doctor of physical therapy. And she had contacted me about me training her for a bodybuilding show. And so in November, I meet with her and I happen to mention just like, "Hey, we have been looking for a physical therapist." I knew she really knew her stuff. She's a super athlete. So I thought this would be a perfect fit. Somebody who also unifies, the physical therapy modalities with very serious exercise and understands that they're not two separate things. They're a continuum. And asked her if she was interested in opening a clinic in conjunction with this gym and this medical clinic. And she jumped at the opportunity immediately, thrilled beyond belief.
Oh my God.
Got another physical therapist, Aaron, with her. So they opened it together. So and that's what I mean by serendipity. It just kind of started falling into place and we had...
I know the feeling.
Yeah, the right vision. The right vision, you find the right people.
Journey, yeah.
and it happens like that, or it happens like that. I can't speak for everyone else, but...
Oh, it also too, once you're doing the right thing. So they're like, I see this as like... When you have an idea and it's something that somebody else for what you're doing, it's out of the norm. But it's something that everybody looks at. It's like, yeah, that should actually be partnered together, but nobody's ever done it. So it's just like, okay, like, yes, you know, like, yeah. So
and I think the biggest thing because of that was the fear of HIPAA.
Yeah.
And then the fear of the confidentiality and where is my role versus this role and where's my expertise versus this one. And I think that there was such a stigma surrounding that in the field of like, no, I don't talk to your doctor. Why?
Yes.
You know, you'll have to sign a release and then we have to cover this space and this space and this space. And yet they'll only give us certain information pertaining to this and this and this and this, unless it was all pertinent. And it was just a very complicated process to work with individuals. So how do you make that work?
Well, the nice thing is, ordinarily, I'm the one walking them up to meet with their doctor or their physical therapist. So that sort of implies I'm a portion of that care. Beyond that, they're the ones giving a doctor permission to speak to me about what's going on. So they're the ones giving direct, either verbal or written permission. So that kind of circumvents any legal issues with respect to that. And most of it, because we're not dealing with sort of infectious diseases, things like that, that would be ordinarily fairly embarrassing.
Yeah.
It is kind of a lower grade issue there, thankfully. Someone comes with a hurt shoulder, it's not something they tend to hide very often. You know, so luckily that has been less of a consideration.
So when they come into your clinic, do they do like an intake of what they need? Do you do an assessment? What does that look like?
For the gym memberships, less so. I do kind of try to find out what style of training they're doing, if they've had any limitations. I mean, it's kind of some of the basics and assess like what they're really looking for beyond just working out, which is sort of the obvious thing they're going to show up for. With the physical therapy clinic, they come in, if they mention that they need physical therapy or that they have an injury, I really like to give them a consultation with the physical therapists. They go through a very comprehensive battery of tests, do the assessment, treatment, reassessment. So it's a pretty straightforward process there in hypothesis, treatment, and retest.
Which is kind of crazy because I'm looking at the situation and when you're talking about doctors, you're talking about all these like, some of these people have to leave their ego at the door when it comes to like, hey, well, you can't talk to them. Like, well, how she was describing it. Like, because you kind of have to in many ways. It's like, oh, you're just a trainer. Oh, I'm a doctor over here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of have to leave your ego at the door to be able to see that the whole thing is working for a purpose. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. And I kind of went through an interesting assessment phase with Mike, the physician with whom I'm working in an open of the gym. When I first met with him, he had some interesting questions. And with each of them that I answered, he wanted to see that I could back it up with research. And it's not an unjustified perspective to take because there are a lot of kind of Yahoo sort of style trainers who know very little and speak a whole lot. And
but that's a very doctor response.
It is.
Show me the research.
Yeah.
And I was happy to do so because I tried my absolute best not to talk out of my ass. That way, okay, I'm saying something that's verifiable and that I can repeatedly help fix. So
I think one thing that science doesn't, like the science world, if you haven't written a paper about it, it didn't exist, right? Yeah. if you hadn't done studies about it, it doesn't matter. But they're discounting a lot of the experience that comes along, which is exactly why I didn't get my doctorate, to be honest.
It's fair.
Because experience outweighs like what you know from a certain specific like targeted study. So I just feel like experience goes a long way and can be backed by patterns and repetition. And you know that and you experience that, you can teach that.
Yep.
But I feel like, the scientific world is more like, show me the paper.
And I do understand in both where they're coming from and from the observational data side, we have to there are observational markers in training where I can say, okay, well, this person's improvement has stalled. I cannot say with certitude why that's happened, but I do know that rest will tend to improve that. So, okay, let's have them rest. It could be any one of half a dozen things, whether that be depletion of neurotransmitters or the muscle itself is just beaten down and it just hasn't had time to repair. Whatever the case may be, I do know that rest and recovery works. So I can say that observationally, we cannot say with certitude precisely what the proximal cause is. Okay, so we have to operate on that quite a bit. On the other side of it, from the physician side, I wouldn't want a physician who's operating on a bunch of like, hey, I've seen it work before. Right? Your fingers right. crossed treatment is not
yeah.
what I want.
Yeah, yeah.
Point taken, touche. Yeah, and Mike had originally asked me about, because I talked about deloading, about taking time to rest and recover in between serious bouts of training. So, you know, if he's been training 6, 8, 9 weeks really hard, it's probably a good idea at some point in time to take some rest to recuperate. And he was like, well, why is that? And it's like, okay, well, we went into the connective tissues and joints and neurotransmitters. They take a little while longer to heal than the muscles.
Yeah.
And those all get degraded after a little while. So if you take just a little bit of time, 5 days to a week to train at 20-30% of what you're normally training at and recover, it tends to help a whole lot. And he wanted to see why would I have held that belief? And there's tons of research on this going back into the early 90s. So it's not hard to find those bouts of research. But it was also showing that there was forms of depression that can be associated with low-grade, long-term overtraining. Just anytime you significantly deplete neurotransmitters, yeah, it's going to happen. And we see it in combines and with special forces training. Like people get beat up and they just run down pretty good. You do that for 2 years, you're not feeling so great.
I have a question on that. So... Because I do feel that I always think that like a lot of the times that you're feeling that whenever you're working out, it's because maybe you've plateaued or you got to change up your routine. So I've always looked at it like I'll be doing specific things and then I'll be like, hey, well, I got to change it up because my body has already gotten used to this, but I've never really thought about it. Hey, I just need a rest.
Yeah.
It sounds funny. Like, I just thought maybe I needed to get more intense.
Super simple, but yet so complex.
If we thought about that sort of in a linear sort of fashion, said, okay, well, let's just take a single example of the squat, an exercise I very much love.
I'm pretty sure. You've already fit under that table right now, brother. Yeah, I know.
But if we took the squat and said, okay, what would we need to elicit sort of maximal stimulus from the squat to grow the quads? Okay, well, let's just say operationally, initially it's 6 sets. And after maybe 3 or 4 weeks, 3 sets isn't enough. We need to add a 7th. Okay, fine. Now we're back to... Now, if we look at that long enough, over the course of like 5 years, what are you doing? Like 45 sets of squats and a single workout?
So, yeah.
No, that's impossible. Your knees would be powder. There's no way you're going to do that. So what do you do? Well... In much the same way that cessation of most things will increase the sensitivity to it, whether that be sugar or alcohol, anything else, you increase your sensitivity to it by cessation. Same thing is true of exercise. So there's little biomarkers and they're called interleukins. There's little inflammatory markers. They are released as a result of exercise. So when they're released, it signals the body to engage protein synthesis in a specific area, tells the body to heal that area. Cool. Well, if you become insensitive to that, you have to train way harder to achieve the same level of result, the same stimulus effect, even if you're doing more degradation. So that's when you feel that plateau. If you scale it back for just a little while, week or so, it's all that's needed.
So, but it's like an active recovery then. Exactly. Basically what you're saying. Yeah. So you're still doing something, but not to the intensity that you were doing it before.
Exactly. So if you're the person who, let's say, for a round number, you're squatting 300 and that's your kind of normal squat level, you might dial it back literally like 115, 135 pounds, and you're doing like 2 sets of 8. You should feel better leaving that workout than when you arrive. You should feel warmed up, prepared for a workout when you leave.
Do you ever experience either of you, like when you're in that phase of working out and you're building on like to the next level and you get sore? Do you ever feel like your mental health is affected when you're sore or like you have more brain fog?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Why is that?
Yeah. Well, again, it's a depletion of central nervous system neurotransmitters. So when the CNS is depleted of that, you just don't feel as good. It's the equivalent to have not having gotten not enough sleep. You just did not recover enough. And that's fine for short bouts. And that's actually what we talk about a lot in fatigue management, is ensuring that that process is not kind of overtaking the mental health, and not you're not training in such a foggy state that you can't function. Yeah,
because people don't actually, when they recover, it's like they don't want to continue, because it's like, why would I feel this way? But if you just push through it,
yes,
and anything in mental health, right? You just push through whatever the barrier is. And once you get into the other side, it's like, well, okay, now I can sustain, and now I can learn, and now I can grow, and now I can achieve things.
You know, it's crazy because, like, so we talk about coping mechanisms a lot. And for the longest time, physical fitness was a huge coping mechanism for me. And there are times where it's just like, even though I don't feel like going to the gym, and it's just like, okay, overpower it, go to the gym and stuff like that. But once I get there, it's just like, you know, this feeling of, you know, coming into the gym and like, you kind of like get this, okay, I'm going to hit it. Rush. I'm going to hit it, whatever like that. Yeah. But then at the same time, it doesn't do anything mentally for me. Like that on those days that I overpower, it does something physically, but mentally it really doesn't do much for me. And is that what you're talking about? Is it that whole, like, I've kind of gotten overworked and I need to like scale it back on maybe my intensity or things like that?
Temporarily, for sure. And when we talk about it as a coping mechanism, it's interesting because exercise is absolutely an essential component of mental health, as far as I've ever seen it. And every mental health professional I've ever talked to has agreed with that.
Yeah.
But I don't know of a single one who would ever say, hey, you know what would be great for your childhood trauma? Deadlifts.
I'll say that.
Okay, no, it's
yeah.
It's a component of that. It's a great component to get there. It helps you feel some control. It helps you dive into good and healthy patterns. By itself, though, as a single point of mental health recovery, not.
It doesn't fix really, the
web. No, it does not. I totally agree with that, man, because I went through so many years of like hitting physical fitness as my only coping mechanism. And it got to a point where it was just like, it decreased how good I felt afterwards. Yeah. Like at the beginning, it was like, man, I felt great for like the day. And then all of a sudden it went for like, you know, a couple of hours. Then all of a sudden it went to like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And I'm trying to get that high again. You know what I'm saying? Yes, trying to get feeling it. That good.
That's exactly what that is though. Yeah, it's a dopamine hit. Yep. Because it's an addiction and you can only go so far. We call it a lethal dose with drugs, but obviously it's not a lethal dose of dopamine in your brain. But when you hit it just like that, you it's the same as if you were going to take a shot of heroin, just on a different level of intensity. And it's the same chemicals in your brain. It's the same process. And so when you get to the gym, you start to get all hypey and you're like, oh yeah, it's going down. It's going down. I don't know if I sound like that. And then you hype yourself up, and then that's the natural like dopamine to fuel your system to get you activated for ready for physical stuff. But then afterwards, you have this period. It's called anhedonia. And when anhedonia hits, it's like that. You can never get to that level that you're expecting. And so you either plateau and crash, or you crash like this.
So it basically is like a person who has utilized heroin for the first time, and they're trying to get that same high that they got that one time. They're chasing that same high.
Yep.
So it's the same thing. Well, and that's one of the biggest things that I've seen through all of this, is that like mental health and physical health are entwined within each other, and they have to be. Like, you see these bodybuilders, brother. Like, you see these guys are huge as hell, massive bodies, but they are depressed, they have severe anxiety, or they have like severe mental issues as well, because they're focused on one part of themselves and they don't focus on the mental aspect of it. Yeah. And I know we had a conversation about one of the times that you were talking about as a trainer that you've had to like send some people, you know, in different directions because you couldn't meet their demands.
Yes.
Or their problem, not their demands, but their issues that they were facing, whatever like that. And how does that work?
Well, you're right. I'm not able to help them in the way that they need. It is not just outside of my scope of legal practice, but it is outside of the scope of my expertise.
Yeah.
So I've taken extra psychology classes because I was became acutely aware that I did not know enough to be useful where I needed to be useful. And I also sought out resources, particularly back in Tucson when I was, you know, first as a trainer, to have mental health resources kind of at my disposal. I can refer out quickly as needed. Mm-hmm. I have a few resources here, not intentionally, but that just, that's kind of how it has fallen so far.
Yeah.
We see that pretty regularly where somebody comes in and they begin training, they begin to trust their trainer rightfully. And just observationally, and it could be just my experience and not necessarily extrapolatable to everybody else, but when someone begins to trust who they're training with and they're exercising hard, it seems to break down certain maybe prefrontal cortex barriers. I don't know if it does something else to the amygdala, either which way, they start kind of getting closer to that trauma mentally and not in a bad way. They're just more accessible to it. They're more receptive to it.
Yeah.
And they begin kind of venting and mm-hmm. I do everything in my power to not judge, not to give advice, but okay, well, let's listen and see what's really going on with this person because there's more to it than almost always meets the eye. The story is almost always deeper than what you might expect.
Well, trauma is stored in the memory of your cells. And like when you exert physically, especially if you have physical trauma, if you were in a car accident, if you were abused as a child, like if it's physical trauma, it really does need to go out physically. And so your body stores it until that happens and it releases. And then that's when you start to process it because you're out of your body's response. You're now into your brain, you're into your memories, you're into your cognition, your prefrontal cortex. And you're like, okay, so let's process this.
You know, and that that's crazy because a lot of the times that I was going through what I was going through, especially when I was working out, like I literally was crying. Like I really was. Like I really felt as if I was crying. My eyes were watery when I was, you know, flipping tires or doing the stupid shit that I do, whatever like that. Like I was literally crying and it was physical. And like I the more and more weight that I added or the more and more crazier the exercise was, the better I felt. But at the same, not better. The more release I felt because it was a way of channeling that pain that I was going through, and utilizing that bar or utilizing whatever I'm moving, and putting that pressure onto it, and it expelled it. So it was something. In many ways, I always tell this to everybody. I was like, yeah, it looked like I was like fucking working out hardcore or whatever like that, but really, it's like I was just like. That was a crying session right there, man. It was just pain, just being removed, but pain that was being removed for only a couple of minutes. And then all of a sudden it would come right back.
Yeah. Which is why a lot of veterans and frontline workers, like we turn to alcohol. Alcohol does the same thing. You know, how many times have we gotten drunk and been like, yeah, just listen to me vent about my life and my struggles. And then afterwards, like, thank you, buddy. But you're talking to the person at Walmart. Like, anybody else in there? No, just me?
No, okay. Just you.
Just me. All right. Just you. All right. But trauma in itself is an addiction. I always say this. Trauma is an addiction because we have to deal with it like an addiction because we're using the same chemicals, the same patterns in our brain.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about mood and you talk about like mental health, you talk about physical health, it's all interconnected because we're all dealing with the same thing. We're trying to solve a problem that our body does not know how to solve.
And I think with what you're doing, I think if you were just to add mental health into that, into one of those little chapters in there, and into one of your many offices you might have, add a mental health specialist, dude.
It is not for a lack of trying. It really isn't.
Seriously, you would change lives. And that is the biggest thing, man. I think when you go into like some people go into like physical fitness as, you know, as kind of just a business. But when you look at it, what you're doing, it's not just a business. You're looking at the whole aspect of a body, the physical part, the health part, but also in many ways, as much as, I mean, you're an easy person to talk to. So of course you're going to be able to get that understanding of somebody else. And at the same time, you're going to have that where people are going to start opening up to you. Now, imagine if you had all of that and then you kind of threw a mental health specialist somewhere in one of those buildings that you have. And all of a sudden say, hey, man, you know, I can't really help you in that area, but I have some people within our building that can be able to help you with that. And we can, you know, send you over there. And you can get some mental health. And I think a lot of we talk about it a lot. I think people go through life thinking that their story is diminished. Like they don't feel like their story is important enough to be able to talk about, because maybe they weren't being shot at, or maybe they weren't blown up, or maybe they weren't all of this, whatever like that. So they feel like, hey, I shouldn't really talk about this because I don't think my story is that important to talk about. But it affected you somehow. It has left that scar within you. But I think, like, you know, law enforcement, doctors, nurses, everybody, they see trauma every single day. So, and you're supposed to go home and leave that trauma at the door and go back into society and be this perfect person. But it doesn't work that way. If you had an outlet to where you can be able to talk about your issues without you thinking that it's going to affect your job, for one, which that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to provide mental health where we can, you know, give them the opportunity to go into a room and talk about their problems without them thinking, hey, is this going to get back to my job? Are these therapists part of my job? Are they going to report back to them? I mean, there's in certain situations, I mean, you kind of have to as therapists, whatever, they have that need, whatever. But I think having them work on themselves continuously, like a person who is physically trying to get better with their body and everything like that, but get better mentally and not wait to the day when they're like myself on the side of the road about to blow their brains out because they haven't dealt with the shit for the last, you know, 10 years. And it's just jumped on their back over and over and over again to the point where they're sitting at the side of the road about to blow their brains out.
Right. And if you talk to the high performers of this world, like the athletes, like, what is the number one thing that they always say that they focus on the most?
Mindset.
Which is weird. Which it's is mindset. Weird.
It's not weird, because if you're pumping like positive things into your repertoire of knowledge of what you know and what you experience and the people that you hang out with, your body is less dysregulated. Yep. And I don't know how that would like do in the gym as far as like your muscles and stuff. Cause I've heard actually anxiety makes you build muscle faster.
It can.
Yeah. I mean, so what is it? I mean, that just completely puts your body into alignment, and then your body can do so much more. That's my theory. What do you think?
You become less panic oriented. Your panic response diminishes when you're really, really in a good mindset. When your frame of mind is appropriately aligned to your goal. When you're using training as a coping mechanism by necessity, when you're using it to cover something else up, it doesn't necessarily diminish the panic response. So there's freakouts. There's you're going for a one rep, you know, PR on deadlift, and you just don't, in that panic mind, you just don't set up quite right. Your execution's off. Your sequence is not quite there. So one of the things I have to factor in when I'm building someone's program is how likely are they to panic under really stressful training conditions. Mm-hmm. So I might have somebody who is genetically super blessed and could train to the end of the earth. I could throw the hardest conceivable program at them physically and they'll be fine. But they begin panicking halfway into that process. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we saw this in basic training. You know, somebody who was totally physically ready to deal with any demand that was thrown at them, they still end up panicking, freaking out midway through, and they end up dropping out. So it is very much that mindset. If you're able to focus properly on each element, you know, diet, training, sleep, yada, 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 you'll be fine. You'll be progressing to the max of your genetic potential. But if any bit of that is offset, it's just every single other thing is going to be deteriorated to some degree or another compared to what you could be doing. And if you're talking about elite performers, there is no wiggle room. There is no give. You are 100% or you are second place. So that it's a must. It's compulsory.
And
so,
there's also like on the other side of that is that when you over perfect, when you over focus on your mindset, you forget about your body.
Yep.
And so I always ask my clients, I'm like, do you feel your toes? And do you feel your fingers? No, we need to work on that. Like be in your body, but also be in your mind. It's a healthy balance of both.
Sure.
Under like certain circumstances, obviously, if you're competing or if you're running from, you know, a cheetah in the wild of San Antonio, you know, obviously you wanted to do that because that's what your body's meant to.
Yeah.
So how does that work though? If you have an elite athlete and they are so in tune with their body, and how does, I guess I'm not tracking on that part. When you are an elite athlete and you're trying to like achieve something great, are you still being mindful to your mind? But like your actual like what it is, like if you're feeling depressed and maybe if you're doing certain things because you're trying to suppress something else, like is that part of what you're saying? Because like what I'm trying to figure out is like, so when I was doing what I was doing, like I was suppressing everything and I was utilizing physical fitness as a way of avoidance. So I never wanted to tackle the issues of what I was really going on with me. So it's like, fuck it. I'll just go and work out and flip these tires and do all this crap, whatever like that. So I was avoiding the bigger issue. I mean, it never resolved the problem. Mm-hmm. It was always just let me put a Band-Aid over the issue so that I can make it another day. You know what I'm saying? So like an elite athlete or somebody who is really, really in tune with their body, and at the same time has that mental state where they're like, oh, well, you know, they gotta track their macros or all of that crap, whatever like that. But at the same time, they're just like, they're not there. Is it some point in within that, is it avoidance as well? Because they're utilizing them trying to get physically fit, but they're not really working on their mindset. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm addressing the question right.
The likelihood that someone's going to be a near elite performer and having not worked on or considered their mindset, it's really pretty minimal. You'd have to be genetically at an entirely different level than everyone around. You name the elite performer in any one space or another, and from the sports side of things, and I promise you they're dealing with a sports psychologist. Mm-hmm. That's maybe not non-negotiable, but I would be dead shocked.
I think at that level, I see a lot of imposter syndrome.
I mean, you got Antonio Brown. Come on, man. That dude is an elite athlete.
But this is how it works. So like they experience something in their life and then they try and self-harm, and that's the beating up of the body, mm-hmm. right? And then they develop this level of perfectionism, and perfectionism is always rooted in shame. And so there's that underlying shame of I've got to be great. I've got to be number one. And this isn't for everybody, but this is for a select few that I've talked to that deal with this. And they say like, when I get to the top, it's like, what now?
Yep.
And that's when they have to stop running from what they've been running from and dealing with the internal stuff here. And life is like, okay, you're going to deal with this? Yeah, because either way, you're going to deal with it, either in consequences of your choices in your life or what happens for you in your life, not to you, but certain things that come into your way, like you're attracting that. And so you're going to deal with it either way. So it's better to deal with it up front and say, okay, this is my issue. How do I solve it?
Yeah. Are you stronger now that you've begun really seeking out like proper coping, or were you stronger physically before you started that?
I was stronger physically before. I've utilized now physical fitness as a love. Before, mm-hmm. it was just thrashing my body. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, my therapist actually looked at it because it's okay for me to say this because my wife already knows about it, but I used to cut. And that was one form of coping for me, I guess, not even coping, but one self of releasing my pressure that I had in me. So when I talked to my therapist was like, I told her, I was like, I haven't cut in a while. You know, I haven't done this. And she's like, how are your workouts? And I was like, why do you keep talking about my workouts? She's like, how are your workouts? And I was like, well, they're still the same. And she's like, you're utilizing your workouts as self-harm. So it is like cutting. Yep. You're not physically cutting yourself, but you really are, which I ended up getting knee surgery. I mean, I remember that. Sorry, yep. So
when cutting can be an addiction.
Yeah, it's a release.
You're just cross-addicting.
Yeah. So what she said, she was like, it might not be an actual blade to your arm, but it really is. You're self-harming yourself because you're doing this. You're like overexerting your body through these crazy workouts because you're trying to release that pressure. Yes, you might have gotten past the whole cutting thing. And the only reason why I got past the whole cutting thing was because it was visible symbols that my wife could see. And it wasn't that I didn't want to cut. It was just that I didn't want her to know that I was cutting. So that was the whole thing about it, is that I didn't want the visible signals to be there and then I was being called on it. If I work out in the gym, everybody just sees the workout. Nobody sees like the actual, what you're actually really doing. They're like, man, that guy's working out hard. Mm-hmm. But they're not really seeing that you're just really killing yourself right now. As much as you might be working hard, and you might be healthier, but fit mentally, you're really just cutting.
That self-harm is going to like go into all areas of your life, your finances, your relationship, because it's your habit. It's your way of coping. And you're going to find that way in all areas of your life.
Yeah.
It's always taken to an extreme one way or the other.
That's what it was. It was just taking it to extreme. Even if I would have taken up basket weaving or something, I would have weaved the crap out of that thing.
An art museum. In
a wicker house.
World's tallest Easter basket.
So
I was just saying, like, I think at that point, because I wasn't really work. I was just putting a bandaid over the problem. I think anything that I would have found some type of relief, I would have gone to the extreme. If I would have become a freaking addicted to drugs or something like that, I would have gone to the extreme when it came to that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. It's just like the mindset of like you trying to get, you know, the best part of your body out and you're trying to be physically, you know, good, whatever like that. But at the same time is, how she says, like, in many ways, like, why are you doing this? Like, okay, you want to be an elite athlete or you're trying to get in better health, but there's another reason why you're going a little bit over and beyond, you know? Like, are you training for a race? Like, if there's a reason like that, when people would ask me, they're like, what are you training for? I'm like, life. I have severe PTSD. God.
For my wife.
Get off my case. You know, leave me alone. I'm battling demons over here. God. So no, it was like that. They're like, what are you training for? I'm like, and I was like, nothing. They're like, so you're just doing this because you're training? Like,
Because
if I would have been training for a triathlon or something huge, something extremely competitive to where it was okay. Like, oh, that's why you're doing that. Like, oh, that's why you're doing that. I understand that.
But it becomes socially acceptable at that point. You know, like people don't want to see you just like killing it at the gym and like outperforming them and then not have a reason to. It's terrible on their self-worth.
Your purposelessness is your purpose.
Yeah. But I think a lot of it, man, like what you're doing is amazing, man. I love your shirt. Strong athlete.
Thanks.
Athletic veteran. Yep. I love it. So is that part of your brand? Because I see some boots up in there.
No, the Strong Athletic brand. So they deal with everything from strong athletic Asians. When there was a Asian hate thing going out, so I ended up getting this. My wife she's got that shirt, so she ended up getting me this one. I really liked it. But
so is your wife a veteran as well?
No, she's not. She's another military brat.
Nice.
And she's actually a DOD civilian now. So. Just can't seem to leave it.
That's how it always is. So when you were building your business, what was the biggest hurdle that you had to face?
Initially, just the literal physical demands of constructing the place once everything was in place. Because beyond trying to get large amounts of fitness equipment during the kind of preliminary stages of COVID, which that was entertaining.
Oh, yes.
Very sleepless nights waiting up for like, man, I really hope this deal comes through. This, you know, whatever. And getting the dumbbells was an epic story of being awake at like 1 a.m. scrambling because there was a, you know, free shipping deal. And like, so that was all entertaining. But then there's 20,000 pounds of equipment to get down either stairs that are at a greater than 45 degree incline and are terrifying, or stairs with a turnaround, which, you know, you have
large equipment.
Yeah, exactly.
You're doing some friend stuff.
So happy you said that. Yeah, pretty much. Like, oh, man, we almost died pulling the leg press down.
Oh, man.
But
if you had advice for someone who is trying to start a business, so like if you go, a lot of people who get out of these fields want to do something on their own. Mm-hmm. They've been part of an institution for so long. They just want to go out and be an entrepreneur, business owner, you know, even maybe open a gym themselves. So what do they need to do to get started? What would you say?
Without any doubt, you need to be around the right people. This whole thing would not have happened properly without Mike. He was the right person at the right time. It would not have happened anywhere near as successfully, maybe 20% as successfully, if we're not for Lauren. If she hadn't stepped in as a physical therapist, it just would not have done the same thing. These were integral parts in making that happen.
So build your network.
100%.
But at the same time, man, you're kind of diminishing yourself because you are a very articulate, intelligent person as well. So like, people are not going to gravitate to an idea unless they believe on the person who is talking about it. Yeah. So they're not going to say, hey, yeah, let's throw a couple of $1,000s into this thing, whatever like that. But they don't really believe in you. Then, you know, I think a lot of the times people have great ideas, but they haven't researched it or they haven't actually like put the time and effort behind it. So I think a lot of the things, it's great to have an idea, but do the work behind it first. Do the research, get the training that you need to do all of that. And it feels like you have. I mean, you were taking psych classes as well, you said, right?
Yeah, that was years back.
I mean, so you were trying to go over and beyond just the physical realm and you were trying to actually learn a little bit mental so that you can be able to provide a better experience for your clients. So it's, I think, well-rounded and being understanding what your idea is and what your dream is one thing, but understand what the work is that needs to be put into it, because nobody's just going to come over and give you money if they don't believe in you. You're the first thing that they're going to look at. They're not going to look at anything else. They're going to look at you the way that you've built yourself and everything like that. So I think a lot of it is, With what you did, it's you built yourself up to make yourself in a way that people trusted to be able to do this with you. So, you know what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, I'm a bit of a philosophical drama queen. There's no doubt about this. I, you know, used to pontificate about ideals of freedoms. And it's like, okay, you know, calm down, Junior. Like, chill out. But for that, I do tend to develop passions pretty hard, pretty quickly. And that can make for a degree of charisma behind it. Yeah. And so having sat on this idea for as long as I had, because I had a couple of really good experiences at the beginning of my career. There was a gym back in Tucson called Better Bodies. It was incredible. The owner, he absolutely pushed us to be creative, be pushing the envelope a little bit, design something new, create, engineer, re-engineer, rethink something that you've been doing for 5 years one way that somebody can't quite do. How are you going to fix that? Well, how do you make it work for them? So that sort of creativity he was pushing was absolutely essential for me to have sort of developed the ideas that I have. He engendered that very well. So there were those experiences that kind of allowed me to gain foothold and get this really solid image in my head of what fitness could and should be. It's an odd position to be in as a trainer in a certain way. I'm one of the very few tangential medical people who see somebody every week.
Yeah.
Nobody else in the health industry is going to do that unless someone is already really in trouble. It tends to be that when things go really wrong, now you're seeing the people you needed to see probably 6 months ago every week. I'm seeing it before it's a serious issue. And if I'm able to recognize these things early enough on, we can get them help before there's a serious problem.
Yeah.
So that's the referral process.
Yeah. Was there ever a point where like you were going through this process of before you start your business and you're like, okay, I'm scared.
Oh yeah, dude, whole time.
Like, yeah, like what is this going to look like? How am I going to do this? How is this going to get done? Like, what are the details? Was there, when was that dip for you? Was it when you were coming off of, out of the service or was it later?
Oh, for this business, it was a lot later. In the actual building of this business, you can ask my wife, there was a lot of really sleepless nights as I'm, mm-hmm. you know, reading on how do you file for insurance properly? How do you file your taxes? Like all these silly things I never, ever thought I would really need to know, but I very, very clearly did.
Yeah. Did you hire a coach? Like a business coach?
No. I just went and reading.
So you did it all yourself? Yeah,
that's awesome.
Okay,
man.
This is what not to do. If you're going to start a business, hire a business coach.
Yeah, I'd been sitting in the industry for a long time, so I'd gained a lot of the background information, having worked at smaller places. So while I did not hire a coach, I had known very, very closely, I think, 4 separate business owners who had already done it. So I'd gained a lot of information background on the
steps. So you had mentors?
To some degree. One for sure. He definitely gave me the right push. I don't think he intended to, but he definitely was a good part of it. Yeah, Justin, yeah, thank you. So, yeah, the process of being scared, that didn't go away for a really long time. At no point in time in the whole construction, and I was still working at Lifetime as I'm building this whole thing.
Yeah.
It was a full-time job plus building that. Nah. It was insane.
How long did it take you?
The construction started in March of 2021. And I think the major components of it were done in early May. So it was a 6-week process and it was an absolute nightmare in a couple of ways.
But you built it in 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is insane.
So that was, we had to do construction on the space itself, had to knock down some walls, construct a few others, paint the whole inside of the space. And then there was moving 20,000 pounds of equipment and 6,500 pounds worth of rubber mats. And that was all, it was rough. It was physically demanding. I was beat up, but the vision was more important.
Yeah.
That was the thing. I think a lot of people think that, you know, once you have it, you know, there's no fear. No, they're always terrified the whole time.
No, yeah.
I was absolutely scared. I was scared of getting crushed by a leg press trying to bring it down the stairs. I was scared of the whole business not working. There was so many levels of concern, but
they always say like when you switch from a 9-to-5 job perspective to an entrepreneurship or a business owner, it's a total different language that you have to develop because they say get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Yes. If you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. And it's a totally different feeling because 9-to-5, we show up to work and somebody tells us what to do and then we do it and give them a smile and then go home to our families. Yeah. But with business, it's not.
I think it's the whole like fear of, I mean, we're doing it right now with the finance and stuff like that. Sometimes when you got to dish out, $500 or $1,000 or for you. I mean, yours was even more. Yeah. And you had to dish this money out and you're just like, you're hoping you get this money back, and somehow like, I told this before we even started. Sometimes when you're doing the right thing, it just comes back, man. It just somehow like we've somehow received everything that we've put out. Yep. It's come back to us. Mm-hmm. And the thing is I think one of the things that you were saying about that one gym that kind of pushed you to, be creative. I always tell this to my girls. I think thinking outside the box is crucial because if you don't think outside the box, then you're just being like everybody else. Yep. And what's different? Like, what is different about you? You know what I'm saying? And I think if you want to have, like, if you want to put, like, make your mark in society or in life, whatever like that, you have to be a little bit different. And it's okay to be different. Like, it really is. Because somehow that different aspect that you threw out to this, is something that somebody else has wanted to do, but has always thought that it's just way too different. Like I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's always thinking outside the box in the realm of like what really is needed. And I think we touched base at the fundraiser. We talked about this. We go through life looking at situations, thinking and knowing that something needs to get done. Like you look at the situation, you're like, police officers should have, you know, free therapy at one point. Yeah, you know, they should have free therapy, and it's not attached to the force where they can be able to go and find relief. But nobody has done it. And also too, not just that, but then children, then you have, you know, spouses and all of these other aspects as well. But yours is amazing because you have physical therapists, you have doctors, you have all of these different areas of the human body all in under one roof. Yep. So it is outside of the realm. It's outside of the box of what a gym usually looks like. Usually you come to the gym with a bunch of meatheads.
Yep.
And yeah, let's get into it. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. Yeah. But here it's more of a scientific like view to it, where it's more about let's approach at this in a way that it's more, you're going to have more benefit for not just the short term, but the long term.
I hope it becomes the standard across the board.
And that's exactly my hope as well. Yeah. And to your point about the 9-to-5 versus entrepreneurship kind of mindset, it's task oriented versus vision oriented.
Yeah.
As I'm coming to understand it, 9-to-5, you show up, you do what you're supposed to do, head home. That's cool.
Yeah.
And absolutely, there's a demand for those jobs. And I think, honestly, most people are probably better suited for that kind of job. Mm-hmm. The vision oriented usually comes from someone who is a bit over dramatic, you know,
I'm the star.
Touch of, distaste for authority.
Not talking
about me at all. Yeah. You know, doesn't like authority all that much, you know, maybe has
totally me,
you know, worked, you know, in an industry long enough. They've really, really gotten to familiarize themselves mm-hmm. with it so much so that they see where there's gaps. And then is involved the critical thinking side of it, where, okay, well, we recognize there's a problem. There has to be some form of solution, let's hope. And, well, how do you attack that problem? You know, if there's a problem, what is the creative mechanism you're going to use to solve it? Mm-hmm. And what's funny is I think the power of human ingenuity is underappreciated for what it can do in every conceivable element of things. It is just not anywhere near appreciated like it should be. So how much can we outthink a problem? Well, we're in space. How much more, you know, come on. Like, we can do, there's a lot that can be accomplished. So, you know, if you just give it some thought, the compartmentalization of medicine, you know, your surgeon doesn't know your primary care. They don't know your physical therapist. They don't know your therapist. They don't know your, okay. Why don't they?
And you mentioned overthinking.
Yeah.
That is what keeps us from asking for help in the first place, because we overthink everything, right? So instead of just going to the gym or going to call somebody or going to find a mentor, or going to find a coach, whoever, whatever it is you need to do, instead of just doing it, we overthink it. And we're like, but it's going to be scary if, and what if this happens? And then this and this, this, if businesses were run that way, like it would take forever.
Nothing would get started. Nothing would get started.
Even more so, like with COVID and everything, this could be like a million times worse.
Yep.
But I like what you said, is that there's people suited for 9-to-5s because it's great. Like that's what we need, right? And then there's other people who are entrepreneur mindset. But I think a lot can be learned from both sides about life in general. Like there's some times where you're just going to have to do tasks. You're just going to have to answer to somebody. You know, and there's sometimes in life where you want to break out on your own and venture out and be creative and build something. And I mean, I think it's beautiful as long as it's balanced.
Well, yeah. And I've a couple of times in my own head, I've gotten so far out beyond where I'm at that it's like, oh, wait, hold on. I gotta fix these like day-to-day issues at the same time. I can't be, you know, 2 years ahead and then, you know, forget to pay my internet bill. Like, damn it. No, can't do that. So yeah, I think the capacity to complete tasks at rapid rate is really cool amongst the 9-to-5 crowd because they do that extremely well, probably better than I do in most ways. Mm-hmm. The efficiency with which they often work is incredible because they get a lot done. But on the other side of that, can you create a new vision? Can you, pave a new path that's just not yet been seen? Well, that is an important step. That's how things get progressed forward. And to your point, I really want the new medical standard to be the unification of preventative and rehabilitative medicine in all forms to be unified, not seen as separate, not seen as needing to be this department. Okay, fine, but there's got to be information exchange. Mm-hmm. I really do think, honestly, a lot of it needs to be verbal. The ability for me to talk to the physical therapist and say, okay, well, all right, we had a pec minor issue. What would be your recommendation on that? And her exact response today was, okay, he needs to do more dumbbell work, not barbell work. Okay, kind of cool. Because that's precisely what I was thinking, to change the bar path a little bit.
Yeah.
Those are small things that we're able to exchange that's really hard to do on a piece of paper or through an email.
Yeah, the way we did it in rehabs was we would come out a table as a team, and we'd have our therapist, we'd have our clinical director, we would do a case review. Case review. And there would be the nurse and the doctor and the experiential person, maybe the yoga instructor, whatever programs that we had around a table talking about this one patient, this one client, and saying, okay, so this is the issue that I see with them in group here. And then what do you see as a therapist? What do you see as an LT? What do you see as a doctor? What do you see as, what are they trying to do? Like, what are the behaviors? What are the patterns? And it was a beautiful picture of the whole person, because you can act however you want to for an hour to a certain person, but you have to be consistent over time with a holistic perspective. And then we see your blind spots, and then we show them to you, and then you're like, oh, like, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, well, and at times there's a little incidental statements that someone will make that are deeply important that the therapist might not have heard, but the trainer did, or that the physical therapist may have noticed a subtle movement pattern that is really indicative of an incumbent problem. Okay, so those sort of things, they get ahead of issues and they treat things way faster.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that is the model. That's the concept behind it.
So if you had to provide anybody with just advice, not just to open a business or whatever like that, but just in general in life, like, what would you say?
Take your time and think it through.
Love that.
Again, I very much believe in the power of human ingenuity and the ability to think through problems. Use the Einsteinian thought experiment to come up with relativity. Like, okay, so you just slow down a little bit. Don't panic. Think things through. You'd be amazed at what you're going to accomplish. That paralysis of analysis, you're overthinking, freaking out. Calm down. Slow down. Think it through.
Love that.
Wonderful.
Well, brother, thank you so much for being with us and, sharing your story and your journey through your business and everything like that. And I am definitely going to go to your gym and wear leggings too. So.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
Supposedly they're comfortable, so I'm going to do that.
Make sure they're polka dotted, though. You have to stand out.
My wife says she's going to get me some unicorn ones.
Okay, there you go.
I'd pay money.
Yeah, some mesh unicorn.
All right, brother. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.